G'day everybody and welcome back to the podcast, Control, Alternate or Delete. My name's Lockie.
I'm Matt.
And today we've got a very special guest in the studio. We've got Dwayne Harris from World Fitness Cartel. Welcome, Dwayne.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Dwayne, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, well, so I run World Fitness Cartel, or WFC as we kind of go by. Easier to remember that way. It's basically a martial arts and strength and conditioning gym. So we cross your traditional style cardio weights 24/7 with martial arts. So we teach Muay Thai, we teach boxing, we teach jiu-jitsu in the one facility. My background, I've got a pretty extensive martial arts background. I started back when I was 12 years old and continued all the way up. Well, I'm still training now, so being 40 years old, it's a reasonable amount of time. And the business came about obviously from my passion for martial arts and teaching.
Yeah, great. And you've also got a clothing business, or you've got a
brand? I did have. I ran Rogue Fightwear for about 5 years when I was living in Queensland on the Gold Coast. Yeah. That again came about from a passion for Muay Thai, for the fight game. I wanted to design and sell apparel that you could train in, that you could wear out, that you could basically show the world, this is what I do, kind of thing. More like giving people an identity, if you like.
Okay, yeah, cool. So you also had a little bit of experience in Nimble and also QuickFlix. Yep. How has that contributed to you starting this business?
Those two roles, they were probably roughly 5 years each. Those roles were fantastic. They were both startups, they're both small businesses when I started. By nature of a startup, you have the flexibility to take on over and above what you would get in a corporate job for a similar role, if you like. So that allowed me to have experience in technology, in product design, in sales, in service, in a whole range of different things.
Yeah, okay, cool. So you've always obviously had a passion for a fitness and fighting. Tell us a little bit about, why you first decided to start your business here in Melbourne and the location and how you went about starting it.
Yeah. Well, basically it would have been start of 2015, where I was working at the time, which was Nimble on the coast. They were going through some structural changes, quite big changes. And it was a really good time for me to look at following what I wanted to do. Over the course of my career, I've run several smaller businesses, PTing, the fightwear, obviously. Even when I was in my early 20s or 19 even, I started like a mowing business where we built up. And funnily enough, it was only quite a small business. But I got the clients, I built up the route, and then I gave it to someone else to go and mow. So I took shaving off the top of that. But it's something that I'm passionate about is building businesses, watching them grow. It was a good time for me to look at doing something. We just had our first kid, my wife and I, and I was at a point where I wanted to do something for myself. This is probably going to sound bad, but I like to do things my way. If I've got an idea and I believe strongly about it, I want to follow it through. Yep. And being your boss, really, there's no better way of doing that.
No, of course. Yeah. But you'd probably be the type of person that will own those things if they don't necessarily go the way that 100%. They go. So you take the good with the bad in that sense.
Yep. And that's a key point, actually. You need to be accountable for everything. If something goes wrong in my business or with my coaches or staff, I look at the overall picture and I go, where did I fail for this to happen? Not that bad things happen all the time, but it's important that you own even things that you would easily pass the blame onto. You need to own it first, and then work your way on from there.
Yeah, No, that's definitely something that's key in leading a business, I suppose, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Definitely.
So tell us a little bit about, you started the business, how'd you go about getting your first customer and opening your first location, I guess, and that was in, what location was that in?
Ferntree Gully. So Ferntree Gully was the first. Yeah. We've only got two at the moment. That came about, so I was based on the coast when we formed the business, got all our branding and all that kind of stuff done. And originally I was going to open on the Gold Coast, but I'm originally from Melbourne, so I got a better network down here. Although I'd been away for 10 years, I made the decision to move the family down and source a premises down here. So it took me, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 trips back and forth looking at properties. It was important for me to get street frontage because I wanted big, bold branding.
Yeah.
The sizing needed to be right. Things like car parking and all that kind of stuff you need to consider. It's easy to get permits with minimal car parking, but all it does is irritate your members if they're struggling to find a car park. So the premises needed to be really, really good, really viable. And then, yeah, I basically put an offer in to lease the premises. That was accepted. And then we moved.
Yep.
It was pretty much as quick as that. And then the next process took a fair amount of time. Going through council, getting all your permits and all that kind of stuff. At the end of the day, it's easy to cut corners and do things quickly, but the implications of something coming back if you haven't done things by the book, it's not worth it.
Yeah, that's, you know, right.
Anyone can come through my business and look at any part of it or do any kind of audit, and it's all by the book.
And I guess that's probably a difference when you're passionate about what you're doing, because you obviously want to protect what you've got, and that's
100%.
Yeah,
100%.
Yeah, great. So you've established the location. You've gone through the process of getting all those bits and pieces together. There's a little thing that you do need to have a successful business, and that's customers.
That helps.
Just a minor detail. Yeah. So how do you go about starting that process? Did you...
So I did a postgrad, some postgrad study in marketing.
Yep.
Plus, with the two roles that I'd had, I'd been in charge at various points, or at least contributing to their social media. So those things, coupled with also Rogue Fightwear, which was heavily heavily rooted in social media in terms of clients and exposure and stuff like that. I basically pulled all that experience together. And then made a small marketing plan for the first 6 months, which included some social media advertising. It included letterbox drops. We used flashing signs out the front. I can't even remember what they're called.
The ones you hire.
Yeah, the ones you hire, you know.
Yeah.
And of course, we had to have foundation memberships.
Yeah.
So a heavily discounted rate where... you can sign up for any one of the memberships that we have, whether it's gym or martial arts or whatever, at a discounted price. But the deal is you sign up before we open.
Yeah.
So by the time the doors open, you've already got 20, 30. Well, we had 95, I think, when we opened.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So you've got a base to start with.
Yeah. And did any of that base come from... the relationships of the network that you had here, or from the Rogue Fightwear crossover? Did
Some of that come along with it? Not so much Rogue, because most of the people involved with that, I had sponsored athletes and all that kind of stuff, but most of them were Queensland based.
Okay.
And a little in Perth as well. But some of the base, certainly did start from people that I had contacts with in Melbourne. Daniel, in fact, who runs our Churnside Park branch, he's a childhood friend, so I've known him since we were 6 years old. When he found out I was opening a gym, he was down there training with me.
Yeah,
you know, we were training in you've seen the gym,
yeah,
an empty warehouse with mats. Right. That's all it was.
Yeah,
you know, it's changed heaps. It's changed heaps.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, that certainly does help.
You said that was part of your decision to move down as well, because you knew you could bootstrap that and actually get it kicked off, or did it kind of come as a surprise to you once you'd...
It didn't make that much of an impact, to be honest, but it was more having the family around, having my friends, if I did need some help, and a lot of them did, you know, they're tradies, so they helped me out quite a bit. To start a gym, it takes a fair amount of financial investment. So for the first 12 months, you know, I was broke, put it that way, because everything was going into the business and paying off debt, you know, that we'd borrowed to start it up. So to have contacts or mates that were able to help me out, it just helped us get up and running a lot quicker with slightly less pressure.
Absolutely. So you obviously started your business, and there would have been some failures along the way. What were some of the failures you had, and how'd you see through them? How'd you work around them? If someone was starting a business listening to the podcast, what were some of the failures you had, and how could they
have been? There was quite a few failures.
Speed humps.
Speed hump. Look, yeah, and that's the way you've got to look at it, because you make the mistake once, you don't make it again. One of the key things that I found was with my advertising, and there's quite a few learnings I got out of this. First thing I did was I did letterbox drop of about 12,000-15,000 flyers with an offer on it. You know, it looked good, looked reasonable. First mistake I made was getting Australia Post to deliver it.
Right.
Ridiculous.
Okay.
Right. That cost me about $3,000.
Yeah, right.
Still hurts me today.
not bitter at all.
So I learned quick smart. Okay, there's other distributors that can do it for $200 to $500.
Okay.
You know, number one. Number two, with your offline marketing, particularly things like flyers, even though you might have a call to action, there's no real way of tracking unless you ask them to bring the piece of paper in.
Sure.
It's easy to get lost. People look at it, go, oh yeah, that might be a good idea, and then they put it down and get swept up and in the bin. And they've forgotten about it. So in terms of a direct response, it's probably not the best or the quickest. So that's one thing.
Just on that though, do you think that helped with getting the name out there? Because obviously you had the big bold street frontage in Ferntree Gully. Do you reckon that seeing that there and then people driving down the road, seeing it again, do you reckon that has...
100%. Did anybody mention... Oh, we did get sign-ups from that. It's not that we didn't. It's just the return on investment is unknown. But on speaking about that, you know, you might send an ad, you might face an ad or a bit of branding or whatever to anyone. It's going to take 6 or 7 times before they actually register and start remembering it and actually action on it. You know, at least.
Absolutely.
That timing is everything, isn't it?
Yeah.
So if you had your time over again, rather than doing so many, would you still do the leaflets, or would you invest more in a digital footprint?
I would. If I was going to open, I definitely would. I'd do it a lot cheaper.
Yeah.
Right? Obviously, because I know no different ways of doing it. But I'd couple it with better social media, potentially some other street signage. We're in a stage at the business, so I've got a pretty heavily branded ute. We've got a trailer that we can put signage up and stuff. So there's lots of other things that I can do within a local area, like park the ute or park the trailer somewhere. Main intersection, you know, you leave it there for a week. It doesn't cost you anything because you're parking your vehicle, but it's getting that exposure. People seeing that brand, they may not necessarily know what it is. But at night time when they're scrolling through Facebook, all of a sudden an ad pops up that looks familiar. Oh, that's what they do. It's planting the seed.
Okay, so Facebook is something you advertise heavily on, is that?
That's probably our main avenue of lead generation. Would be Facebook.
And so do you use any other social media platforms like Instagram or anything?
We use Instagram and we use YouTube. Not so much for lead capture, more for putting out content. Those platforms, I have tried on Instagram, whether it be that I didn't quite nail the copy or the images or whatever. It wasn't as successful as what Facebook was for me. So I would rather keep that platform for content. People can come to us and see, you know, cool techniques or how to do stuff, or
Trying to provide some sort of value to...
Adding value that doesn't cost anything.
Yeah.
And it's just putting that content out there.
Yeah, you know? Cool. Have you done much with, communities and base like that? So you're building a community within your brand, like for all the customers that turn up?
In terms of internally, or you're talking external?
Externally.
External. So when we first started, I did quite a lot of work with schools and footy teams, basketball teams, that kind of stuff, which was great. You know, they'd come in, we'd train 20 to 30. Most of them were kids. Teenagers were the oldest we did. Oh, no, tell a lie. We actually did some adult guys from Knox, I think. We put them through some jiu-jitsu training and stuff, you know, which was pretty cool for them. So we did a lot of that stuff. We kind of cross supported each other, in terms of, social promotion and that kind of stuff. It wasn't about making money by any means. It was more helping them, getting them involved and giving them a bit of an experience. And if they liked it, they could come back and train.
Yeah.
So I did that for probably the first year and a half, 2 years, reasonably consistently, one or two sessions a quarter, with various teams. But we got to a point where I ran out of time in the timetable.
Yep.
Like I physically had no space. So we kind of put a stop to that. Not that I stopped it straight up. I passed it on to another colleague just down the road, runs a boxing gym. Send them all down that way because he can accommodate.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yep.
Cool.
Back onto Facebook. How do you track your return on investment? Say small business owners might be listening to this podcast and they mightn't have done much Facebook advertising in the past. How do you go about tracking it, and what's some of the return on investment that I guess that you get as a business, tangible and intangible? How's it work for you?
The way I approach it, or the way I look at your Facebook marketing, or any marketing really, but more so Facebook, it's self-liquidating advertising. So I put money in and I'll get a 1-200% return on it. And that's a non-negotiable for us because otherwise we're losing, you know what I mean? So the way I structure it, we go to market with a strong offer and provide really good value. We capture leads, we have the conversation with them, and we convert them into one of those low barrier offers, get them in the door, show them a really good time. Number one, we want to provide good training. We don't want a bad reputation. So that has to be, you know, quality upfront. Absolutely. If the quality wasn't there, we'd have rubbish retention, you know, and then it's even though your advertising's paid for itself, you're not making any money.
Yeah.
And that's the reason why we're in business.
Yeah.
You know, you need the business to grow. So, so basically what we do is we put low barrier offers to the market. We have a chat to the leads, those that are found to be suitable. We charge them X amount for their program, which in turn pays for the advertising.
Yeah. Okay. And then you hope that they stay on following that program, and then from there they become part of the sort of... Yep.
At that point, once they've purchased the intro program, it's then mine and my coach's job to make sure that they love it.
Okay. So obviously this is something that you started, but it gets to a point where it needs to scale beyond you because you can only do so much in a day. So you've got a team of coaches at the moment. Can you talk a bit about how you go about bringing them on, making sure that they're the culture within the team that's doing the training is consistent, so that customer experience is quite good.
Yep.
Can you talk a little bit about that for us?
Yeah, absolutely. So all of my coaches, they're all students, and that will remain the same for almost ever. It's unlikely that I will bring someone external in to coach because they don't know the gym, they don't know the culture. And that to me is very important. Whereas my students, they've been with me for a long time. They've gone through the steps, the processes. They know how I operate. They know how I conduct a class. And I know their standard of technique, the way they communicate. Are they good at explaining stuff? All the usual things that you would look for a coach or trainer.
Yeah.
And then usually I'll put out expressions of interest periodically to see who's interested in coaching, because with Thai boxing, for example, you can be a student and you can train for fitness, you can train for fun, you know, you can train to fight if you want to. But what if you don't want to do those things? What if you actually enjoy teaching or you want to make a career out of it?
Yeah, right.
There needs to be a pathway there that offers that. So I basically put together an internship of sorts, where students, once they're at a certain level, they can start assisting and start learning the ropes from either me or one of the other coaches that we've got on board. And little by little, we drip feed them with information. We get them to take parts of the class and then provide direct feedback. You know, this was good, or maybe you got to change your tone, or we use live examples. And a good one that I use quite often is explaining to my new coaches about tone, how to use your tone.
Yep.
So I'll say to them, watch this part, watch this, and I'll take a count in the class and I'll count 1, 2, 3, you know. And they're observing the students, and then I'll ramp it up. I'm not going to scream in the microphone, but I'll start yelling, and you instantly see a difference in the students in terms of their speed and their power, how they react. They're more alert. And that's a really good teaching tool, because they can physically see the difference. And they go, oh, okay, all right, I've got to change my tone, you know. But aside from that, I put a reasonable amount of time, not as much as I need to, I must admit. But it is something on our 2020 card that I'm going to change.
Yep.
Is spending more quality time with these coaches.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. And just touching on that, I noticed that you say that you've got, you know, the students that have different pathways, and you noted four pathways there. Is that something that you considered? You consider when you're bringing people on, are you trying to talk to people about, you know, what they're doing, why they want to do it, and try to...
We always ask them about their goals.
Yeah.
Why do they want to do Thai boxing?
Is that technique, potentially for new people without having experience, is that generally quite generic? I want to get fitter, I want to do more power, that's...
It is, but in the initial conversation, before they're even on board with us, we drill really deep into why they want to become a member. And to be honest, look, there's some reasons where we kind of go, you know what, you're not really the right fit for us.
Okay.
Because preserving the type of culture that we have in the gym is very, very important. So if someone doesn't fit with that, generally we'll steer them away from signing up.
Okay.
If that makes sense. We're not about, yes, it's martial arts, but we're not about beating the crap out of each other. It's about learning and helping each other and growing as individuals. Martial arts teaches you way more than just the combat side of things.
Yeah.
So every now and again, you'll get people that say, yeah, I'm a street fighter, I do this, I do that. And it's like, dude.
Probably not a good fit.
Nah. You know what? I think our program's full.
Hurts your culture, doesn't it?
It does. If you let those people in the door, it's like a cancer.
Yeah.
You know, it's no good. So going back to your question, we dig really, really deep to find out what it is. And it's not about, I want to get fit, I want to get strong. It's, you know what, I've just split up with my wife. I've got idle time. I feel fat. I don't know why she left me. I need to get my body back in shape. All right, man, cool. I'll give you something to focus on. Let's do this. You know, yeah. And there's heaps of stories. You know, there's people that have had loved ones pass away.
It's a catalyst for being there, I suppose.
Correct.
Yeah. And understanding that allows you to tailor something and way that you communicate to them.
Yep.
And understanding. So I think that's also key from what I've seen as well is with the students, there's a tight bond and a good relationship. And that goes down to the students that are customers to the classes, I suppose, as well. So yep. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. Talk to us a little bit about, I guess, your customer journey and how that sort of, we know that they sign up, it's not a free trial, but it's a startup offer, and then they sort of work through the cycle and eventually may become a trainer if that's what they want to do. But talk to us a little bit about how you, it's easy, I suppose you can start a gym, but getting people to keep coming back.
Yep.
A lot of people sort of sign up to those 24-hour gyms and they might go once. Oh, no, I've done it.
Yeah.
And you'll never, you'll go three times for the year,
yep,
and I've spent a whole bunch of money. But I guess getting people there and creating that culture is important. So how do you go about creating that journey?
It's about helping them set goals. And I try and make it quite easy. So we run a grading system, particularly with our Muay Thai, our kids Muay Thai, teens Muay Thai, adults Muay Thai. We run a grading system. So all the students that come in, they start at a beginner level, right? Think of it as belts in karate. And that's really where the concept came from. So I sat down as part of forming the business and I went, okay, I need to put a syllabus together of things that I want to teach that I believe are valuable. You know, in 30 years worth of training, there's a lot of things that I've picked up, and then there's a lot of things that I believe shouldn't be taught. So, and it took me a long time. I put together a syllabus in a very structured way that allows students to learn certain techniques at a certain level. Once they're competent in those techniques and their fitness is where it needs to be, they can sit for a test or a grading, we call it, yep, and they can progress to the next level, and so on and so on and so on. So there's about 8 levels to work their way through. It'll take you about 5 or 6 years to do it. And when you start off, you're red hot, you're keen, you want to progress, you want to learn more, you want to get to more advanced classes because you get to learn spinning elbows or flying knees or whatever it is, all the fun stuff.
To not be on the receiving end of it.
But it's important that you nail your basics or your fundamentals first. Right, so that's one thing that we have in place is the grading system, and it's almost like a bit of a carrot, really. You're dangling a carrot. You're like, hey, if you can nail your basic stuff, you can sit for this grading, you get promoted, you get to wear a new colored singlet, and you get to learn some more cool stuff, and that keeps going. So for majority of the students, that's important to them because they've never done martial arts in their life. 99% of the students that I teach never trained before.
Yep.
So that's what they look at. And they're like, okay, that's my next goalpost. I've got to get it.
And they're not too far between them when you're sort of starting off. So
no, they're quite...
You can achieve the first couple.
Yep.
So that, I think it's important to be having those little goals as you go, right?
Yep.
Have you found that is also part of...
It certainly is. In terms of retention, it definitely is. Like, it needs to be achievable. If it's too hard, people are going to quit and give up. And then you're just going to lose members, which is not really what we want to do. We want to grow the business. We want to grow a community. So it needs to be achievable. However, I will say that it is a tough process. It's not, you've gone through it, Maddie. Yeah. It's not an easy process, and it's certainly not easy to be eligible to even hit that first step. You've got to actually try.
Yeah.
One thing that I pride myself on, yes, it may lose some people, but if you're not going to give me 100%, you're not going to get that new rank. You need to earn it.
Yeah.
So it is a bit of a fine line.
Yeah. But that just goes to reinforce for the people that are working towards it that it's worth the effort to get there as well.
100%.
The reward is there. Yeah. So it's key to be able to send that message as much as anything.
Definitely.
As well.
And you know what? If you don't, if you're not eligible the first time around, good. It gives you an extra 2 or 3 months to become excellent at A, B, or C.
Yep.
And it just gives you more time to become perfect.
Do you have anyone that is happy not to progress and is just happy to do the fitness side of things?
Yeah, there's been a couple.
Yep.
There's been a couple.
Yeah, okay.
Yep.
Yeah. But you sort of try and encourage people to go for
it. I don't push it by any means, but if I, it's more up to the individual. If they feel like they want to sit for the next grading, which most often happens, they'll ask.
Yep.
Or they'll say, I want to sit this, not necessarily the grading, but I do selection classes to check people's technique, make sure that they are where they need to be. Because the last thing I want to do is say, yes, you can grade, put them in there, and then I have to fail them because they don't make the cut. I'd rather have that conversation beforehand, give them a list of things to work on, and see them in a month or two months or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. There's an elephant in the room, and I need to ask it. How's he going?
I don't like
Matt Sullen comes to me just about every week, and he talks himself up.
Does he?
Yeah, he talks himself
up
dramatically. How's he go? Does he go all right, or is he? What grading system is he on? Has he progressed past the first level?
Matty does pretty good. Matty does pretty good. I only coach it twice a week, maybe, I think.
Yeah,
don't I?
Once or twice at the moment.
Sounds uncommitted.
No, no, it's not saying that he trains twice a week. It's only two times he trains with me.
It has been twice a week.
Yeah, he went through his first grading. I think the first time you were eligible, if I remember correctly, you got injured or something and you couldn't do it.
Yeah, I don't know which injury that was because there's been
a few.
Yeah, I think I might have sliced my finger open on one of them.
Yeah, no training related injuries. All stuff he's done at home or work or whatever.
Yeah. That's probably the safest sport that I've done, to be fair.
Yeah.
Which is ironic.
Well, that would be, I suppose, people looking at your brand, knowing that it's fighting, I guess that you would have that thought process that I'm going to get beaten up.
Yeah.
How do you sort of educate that out?
Again, it comes back to the system that we have in place. You got your intro program. Part of that program, you learn basic defense at a very, very light level. People get a bit of a taste for what it feels like to actually throw a punch at someone and to defend one under control.
Yeah.
And then once they progress into the general classes, our white level classes, it's very... we handhold them and we nurture them through that process as white levels because you can have one bad class or one bad sparring session and you hate the sport forever, you know, and that's not what we want. So I have specific white level coaches and I drill it into them, you know, no hard contact. They've got to have all their protective gear. You need to be conscious of what's happening in the room at all times. You've got to be watching. If people are mismatched in terms of partners, you've got to change it around. You've got to be proactive in looking after these guys. If anyone wants to go hard, that's cool. We've got a hard sparring session at the end of the week. They can do that.
Yep.
You know, that's fine. But in your white level classes, it's got to be all easy. It's about learning how to move, how to read, timing, balance, coordination.
Because it's not something you can just watch and then do. You really need to experience
it. Have to experience it.
It's really, there's a lot of, what's the word for it? I've lost it.
Moving
on. Are you finished throwing me under the bus? Or have you got more?
I got one more.
All right.
Now, it's related to the last question. Yep. I can't fight my way out of a wet paper bag, right? I'm hopeless.
I thought you rated yourself as a boxer.
Yeah.
Really?
I've dabbled. Not really well.
I've got some gloves. Yeah.
I don't want you to take me on or anything. But... for people that can't fight at all, and there might be some people, how can they come along to your gym? Is it suitable for people who have never fought before, that have never done anything?
Yeah, like I said before, 99% of the people that we have never done any kind of martial arts or anything in the past. Nothing. Yeah. So...
yeah, I'd never done it and just sort of picked it up and was really comfortable, so... it's just you just got to get in there and do it. Yeah. Give it a go.
You got to give it a go. That's
and there's
it.
A good mix of both. I see a lot of teens and kids around. There's been a lot of women in the classes recently as well, mixing in with the guys. And it just the way that everybody works together to be able to train, it's really good.
Yep.
Like I don't think that there's too many that are of the women that are afraid to get in there and have it.
Nah, practice. Look, there's been a couple.
Yeah.
But that's more personal insecurities. And once we're made aware of it, we do everything we can to try and work them into it. You know, whether it's spending a little bit more time one-on-one with them, whether, you know, there's a range of different things that we can implement. But we need to break those barriers down. Because once they get over that hurdle, they're fine. Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
You're good, yeah. I'll go. So, question: what's something that people misunderstand about you, and or potentially WFC? Is there anybody that comes in with preconceived ideas about things, or?
Yeah, look, you'd be surprised how many people come in and say, "I want to fight,"
just straight off the bat.
Yeah,
yeah. That's their motivation.
Yeah, that's their motivation.
And throw them in the ring and give them.
My response is always the same. It's, you know what, mate, you've done nothing before. It's usually guys that say that. It's not, I don't think I've heard it from a girl. So the guys will come in, they'll go, yeah, I want to do that. And I'll go, you know what, let's start with the intro program. And if you can show me consistency for 12 months of you training 5 nights a week, we'll talk about fighting. Okay. So because that's the reality.
Yeah. Okay.
Do they stay for the 12 months normally?
Some do. The most notable one, I've got a guy, he actually won our Fighter of the Year award this year, Cameron, and he came to me just over 12 months ago. We had this exact same conversation.
Yeah.
Exact same conversation. And he's a very quiet guy. If you ever meet him, he's not a very talkative boy. Keeps to himself, lovely by all means, but he's quiet, you know. And really the only things that came out of his mouth was, I want to fight.
Okay.
I'm like, all right, mate, cool. So here's what we got to do. And he did it.
Yeah.
He walked out with $300 or $400 worth of gear the day that he signed up. I remember it clearly. Right. And he was in training the next day, you know. And yeah, it went from there. We moved him into the fight team. We gave him more specialized training.
Yeah.
And he came away, he had 2 wins this year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That's
good. So very committed, obviously.
Hugely committed. Yep. Hugely committed.
Yeah, right. That's good. What do you reckon? So you're 4 years, going into a fifth year now. What's the most important thing you've learned in this business, do you think?
I think, look, there's a lot of important lessons, but I think one of the most important would be your people are key. And yep. That's my coaches, my staff, and the students and members. You need to prioritize each one of them or each one of those groups in their own right, and make them feel a part of something. And that's... People come to the gym for various different reasons. We touched on that before. People stay because they want to feel a part of something. You know, they buy WFC merchandise because they want to tell their family, their friends, the world, hey, I'm part of WFC. This is where I train.
Yeah.
People look for an identity. They want to represent something, or they want to be known for something.
Yeah.
And that's, I guess, what we offer.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's sort of your focus, and then everything that wraps around that sort of design to facilitate that, being part of that
definitely
culture, that community.
Definitely.
It's a huge compliment, yeah, isn't it, when someone's wearing your brand out on the street.
Yep.
I don't know if you've got hoodies, you T-shirts.
We've got everything.
Everything. And you see your customers wearing it loud and proud,
yep,
walking just to get their coffee in the morning or something like that.
Yeah.
You must be very proud of what you built.
It's awesome. It's awesome to see. And, you know, I say to my wife at times, I go, have a look at this guy. Or, you know, we'll be out and we'll see someone wearing a hoodie. Or I might be looking at a student that's been with me for 2 years. Have a look at where this person's come from and where they are now. It's me personally, I love seeing that stuff.
Yeah.
I love it. It makes me feel like I've done a good job.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's doing what it should be doing.
It's a good reward.
It's rewarding, yeah.
Do you capture those success stories and publish them, or how do you tell those stories?
At times, it's admittedly, it's something that I need to do more of, but that list of more ofs for me...
It's just getting longer and longer.
Mate, it's getting longer and longer, and it all happened. Like, we experienced a lot of quick growth really quickly, and... In order to scale, I need more bodies to help. And we're going through the process of recruitment and stuff at the moment, because otherwise things slip through the cracks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I guess those list of wants, to-dos and so on just goes to that continuous improvement and always trying to innovate in the business.
Definitely.
Do you use any sort of technology or tools or things to assist to manage the business? I mean, you've got an app, I believe.
Look, there's a range of stuff that we use, a range of softwares and whatnot. The app is very handy because it allows us to see how many classes people have been attending. And that's good, particularly from a retention point of view, because if people aren't training, that's your first indicator that, you know, they're going to want to leave. Pull out at some point, yeah, exactly right. So we have a process in place where we touch base with students now on a regular, every 2 to 4 weeks, we will contact them. How are you going? How's the training? Is there anything we can help you with? And there's different stages of conversation that we have with these people, depending on where they're at in their journey. Until they get to a point where they're, not that anyone's not part of the family, but they're really comfortable when we have those conversations as we see each other.
Yeah.
It's more touching base with the newer ones or the first 8 months, that's an important time.
Yeah.
You know?
I suppose in that trial period or the first little period that they sign up to as well, it's really important to nurture and be in contact and understand.
Definitely. So the way we coach those classes is very different to how we would coach a general Muay Thai class, because people are apprehensive. They're scared. They're nervous. They're intimidated. It's martial arts. It's punching people. It's getting hit. So we need to, dispel all of those negatives and show them that it's really not that bad whilst giving them a solid workout.
Yeah.
You know, and once they're comfortable, and they feel they're like, yep, this is a good fit. I like you as a coach. I like the people. I like the environment. I want to stay on board. Yep. Cool. Let's ramp it up because you've got the basic skills now. And then we kick it off from there. Awesome. But there's touch points the whole way.
Yeah.
The whole way. That's part of why we put Brittany on, actually. So she takes care of, we have an aftercare process. So once students come on board at various intervals, we will give them a phone call, a text, an email, to touch base and get some back and forth conversation happening.
Yep. Okay. So you've got a feedback system to try and capture.
Yep.
Okay, cool.
All right. Well, I'm going to start to finish up. Have you got any more questions?
No, I'm good.
What I want to know, is how people listen to the podcast can get in contact and how they can sign up to your gym.
Yeah, easy. Probably the easiest way, wfcgym.com.au, the website, easiest one to remember. Pretty much on any page, there'll be a lead form where you can put your information in and one of the team will get in touch. We've got a range of programs, so gym-only membership, we've got boxing, we've got kids programs, we've got the adults Muay Thai. So there's a range of stuff there that people can choose from.
Yep, something for everyone.
Yeah. Brilliant. No experience required.
No experience required.
So even if you can't fight like me, you don't need to know how to. So that's good. Good place to start.
And what would be your message to somebody that might not be able to join the gym if they're not in the close by or they're interstate or something like that? I mean, what would you say about doing a program in general? What should we look out for in a gym? Or
if they're considering... If someone's considering martial arts or Muay Thai or whatever, you need to vet, the system and who the head coach is. What have they done? Where have they come from? And it doesn't necessarily mean they have to have fought professionally before.
Yeah.
That's not the be-all and end-all, but they need to be a fairly well-accomplished coach. What are their students like? How long have they been around? Who did they learn under or grade under? And then the next most important thing is, what does their program look like? So is it a jump into class and sink or swim, or is it a more handheld approach that will give you the skills to continue on at your best? I think we spoke about it earlier. There's a lot of gyms that will just throw you into a class, and I said almost from the get-go, I'm not doing that, because people have a horrible experience and they don't come back, or they hate martial arts.
Well, it's probably a bit much to expect the students that are in that class that have some experience to understand where everybody else is coming from as much as the coaches. So it makes sense to have a program that's dedicated to getting those fundamentals in place.
Yep, definitely.
So, no, that's great. I think that's good. I think it's time to wrap up.
You want to wrap up, or I guess I'll...
No, you're the talent, mate. You do your job.
All right, guys. Well, thank you very much for listening. Thank you, Dwayne. Thanks for coming in.
Pleasure.
I reckon you gave some really good tips there for a lot of small business owners. So thank you for that. Thank you, Matt.
Thanks, Lockie.
And we'll see you next time.
See you next time.